Hello, podcast listeners. Welcome to the Fire Injury and Policy Research Program at the University of Washington, where we're doing a series of podcasts on the wonderful researches associated with our program. I'm Fred Rivara, and today I have Dr. Elizabeth Waybright from Washington State University. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Can you just tell us what department you're in and your affiliations?
Yes. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Human Development at Washington State University, which is based, I'm based in Pullman, Washington, on the east side of the state. I'm also an adolescent extension specialist for the Cooperative Extension System, which is delivered through WSU. And just as a quick plug, Extension has an office in all 39 Washington State counties and one on the Colville Reservation. And so it's really a means to translate research into communities and for those that need it the most. I'm also an affiliate with FIPRIP.
Great, thank you very much. So you had a recent publication in Injury Prevention, which is on strategies for recruiting adolescents in rural areas for firearm research. So can you first tell us, what are the special issues when trying to recruit adolescents, particularly in rural areas, into a research study?
Yeah, I think I'd like to start by separating these things. So first, maybe I can chat about the unique considerations for recruiting adolescents. Obviously, there are some groups with additional protections to consider when you're doing research. So those under the age of 18 are one of those protected groups. And this means that we not only need to obtain adolescent assent, which is really the agreement when someone isn't able to give legal consent to participate in research, right, but we also need their parent or guardian consent. So you're really obtaining permission from two people for adolescents to participate. I think, and that's more of a logistical piece. Right. I think one of the other things to keep in mind is that even within the developmental stage of adolescence, there are significant differences between, say, a 12-year-old and a 17-year-old. And so this includes differences in things like decision-making, critical thinking, ability to reason. And so you really have to take this into account when you're considering the research topic. And I'm not sure from my experience that folks that development is taken into account enough in situations, especially when it comes to recruitment. So what topic are you trying to engage adolescents on? And is it appropriate to be talking to the age range that you're interested in talking to?
Right. I mean, as a pediatrician, I really appreciate that and understand that.
I think
what about the rural area issue?
Yeah, I think when we think about that now, adolescents who live in rural settings, I want to bring in some rural specific recruitment considerations. There is some research on that. So just in general, we know rural communities are smaller and have fewer people, and that just means there's fewer people to recruit. But among those who live in rural communities, there's a perception that sometimes everybody knows everybody else's business. And this means that if you're an insider, it can be especially helpful and important. And conversely, if you're an outsider, there may be some mistrust or curiosity, at least, of who you are and where you're coming from. So parents of rural adolescents could be mistrustful of folks they don't know and who are seen as outsiders.
Right.
In our project, we collected qualitative data, and we had multiple adolescents from the same rural community in the same room. And I think that can be good and bad. So adolescents may be likely to be familiar with each other, but it means maybe they're less likely to share in that setting. So these are some of the things to think through when it comes to adolescents within rural communities.
I appreciate that. We have this issue sometimes with patients that need translators, and sometimes they don't want to use translators because they are known within that community. So what are the barriers that you discovered in your strategies that enabled you to successfully recruit for this study?
Yeah, you know, there is literature out there on barriers to recruitment, and some of these barriers are fairly well known and understood. So in the literature, I generally saw barriers separated by role. And by role, I mean like role of research participant, role of recruiter, role of institution. And there's a commonly cited participant barrier, which I think we could another time have a conversation whether it's really a participant barrier or maybe more of an institutional barrier, but it's mistrust. And I heard as we were recruiting, you know, a lack of mistrust in, you know, the institution that is a researcher that I'm working for, in the government, in the funder, and so on. So some of this mistrust, you know, stems from historical mistreatment or exploitation. And I think I want to come back to the idea of mistrust maybe later in the conversation when we hopefully talk about firearm research specifically. But right. I do want to acknowledge one other barrier, which comes up in both urban and rural, which is the time it takes to participate in research. You know, it's not only the time to engage in the study, whatever that looks like, but also the time to get there and back. And I'm going to connect this to transportation, because obviously in rural communities, they're more spaced out, and it may be more of a burden to get somewhere to participate in research. And so in our study, we address the issue of time and scheduling, which is another challenge sometimes, by being flexible and really providing thoughtful incentives. And I can give you some specific examples of those. That we originally wanted to do in-person focus groups around the state. And we did do some of this, but quickly found that some locations didn't have enough adolescents for a focus group, or some adolescents really preferred to do kind of one-on-one interviews.
Right. Right.
So we pivoted to doing virtual interviews and small virtual focus groups to better meet the needs that adolescents were expressing. And then in addition to the incentive we gave to everyone for participating, for those that attended an in-person event, we also gave out a gas card. And even for adolescents who weren't old enough to legally drive, they still talked about how they would use the gas card and things like using it for a boat or a four-wheeler that they had in their family. So they still seem to value that.
Thank you. So what are the specific barriers related to recruiting for firearm research, and how did you deal with them?
Yeah, we know firearms can be a sensitive topic. It can be a politically charged topic. And it also means that it's a topic where participants may have concerns about the intent of the research, who's funding the work, what we'll do with the information, things like that. Because of this, we were really thoughtful about how we moved forward. So we intentionally engaged a community partner from the start of the project when we were having initial conversations about whether the topic is worthwhile, what it should look like, how the project should be conducted. And from a research standpoint, we engaged in what's called a community-based participatory research process, where I, as a researcher, worked with community-based extension professionals. And we can dive into what's called CBPR maybe another time, but what it means is that my extension partners had an equal say and input throughout the recruitment process.
Right.
So it was pretty drawn out that the first year of the project was dedicated to developing a recruitment plan, going to communities, asking adolescents and parents what they thought about our project, if they parents would let us talk to their adolescents, and then taking that back and making changes and kind of iterating. I think one of the big successes is that my extension partners had credibility in rural communities and in their roles as youth leaders in 4-H. So some of them also were and are firearm owners and users, and so they brought kind of that expertise and perspective with them. And on top of that, they work with adolescents all the time. So they brought this depth of understanding of rural communities, firearms, and adolescents to the table. And to me, this was a key strategy for success.
Well, those sound like really important strategies for people to know about and to be able to use. I'm just curious, what was the stipend that you arrived at that you felt was, you know, attractive to people but not coercive?
Yeah, that's a great point. We ended up giving a $25 gift card to participants, just to adolescents for participating, and then a $15 gas card if they came in person.
It's a relatively modest amount of money for that.
Yeah.
Yes. Any other advice you want to give researchers who might be trying to recruit participants, particularly adolescents, for their studies?
Well, yes. For starters, I'm happy to share the publication. And we have a research brief coming out soon based on the publication. You know, I think for me, when it comes to firearms research, I really wanted to, and those that I was able to work with, really wanted to elevate the voices of adolescents. And we used this as a recruitment strategy where we said, hey, this is an opportunity to share your voice and contribute to the work. And I think helping participants see a personal connection between themselves and the project you're doing is important. We really took cues from the adolescents and their families as a team, and I took cues from my extension partners. And so I think that whole group and the partnership really, again, made the project the success that it is.
Well, great. For those of our listeners, the publication was an injury prevention called Strategies for Recruiting Adolescents in Rural Areas in Firearm Research. Elizabeth Waybright is the first author here. It's published in 2024. Elizabeth, thank you so much for talking with me today, and I hope that our listeners appreciate your expertise and guidance in how to successfully recruit participants to research studies. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.